Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another week and another episode. And the guest on this episode is Jeff Farmer, better known to all of you as the NWO Sting. We talk about the NWO Japan, his post-wrestling career, and much more. And that interview is coming up soon. Just a little note here, I am now on Blue Sky. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me there. As a reminder, I am also on Facebook with a page, X, Threads, Instagram, and YouTube, so make sure you follow me everywhere. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will have my guest, Jeff Farmer. So stick around. Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Jeff Farmer, most commonly known to most wrestling fans as the NWO Sting. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm pretty good. So I saw online, it says you were trained by Steve Kern, Ole Anderson, and Blackjack Mulligan. Is that right?
That is correct.
Where was that at?
So I broke into the business with Steve Kern in Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
They used to have a warehouse. I want to say it was off Tyson Road or Tyson Drive. And it's where the Nasty Boys went. Ron Slinker was there. Jimmy Backlund. I don't know if you remember some of those names.
Yeah, Jimmy Backlund became Jimmy Del Rey, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the coach at the time, trainer. So Clark and I broke in there in Tampa under Steve Kern. And then from there, we kind of went into the International Wrestling Federation, which Eddie Mansfield had in Orlando. And then when we got picked up by WCW, that's when, Ole Anderson and Blackjack Mulligan, actually, Blackjack was in the IWF with Eddie Mansfield too. He was doing this, they were the Smoking Guns, but at the time they were the Long Riders. And Jack eventually came to WCW as a coach. So we had him there at the power plant coaching us. And Ole too. Ole was down there at the power plant a lot in Jonesboro, Georgia when we were with WCW. So yeah, I've had the fortune of having some really good coaches and mentors, and that's just here in the US and of course in my career in Japan as well. So yeah, I was blessed. Pez Watley, Sarge, all those guys were down there, Jody Hamilton and the gang down at the power plant. So fortunate to get some really good mentorship from a lot of veterans.
Well, you mentioned Eddie Mansfield, the IWF in Florida there, and that's who you, I think, debuted for, right? Probably right around 91 or so.
Yeah, that was our first match was as Thunder and Lightning, of course, was our very first match was a television taping, a televised match. So talk about a lot of pressure coming out green and your first match being on TV.
Well, tell us about Mansfield and working for him a little bit, because there's obviously lots of stories about Mansfield, some of the things he did on TV, the exposés, and people have some strong opinions about Eddie Mansfield. What was it like working for him?
Eddie, you're absolutely right, but I didn't know enough about the business at the time to know. I didn't even know who Eddie Mansfield was, I had no idea that he had done any expose or anything. I mean, I just he was kind of like the guy there, was who was running the show, but I didn't know much about him. So he was fine with us, he treated us fine. I knew he was a former wrestler, but I didn't know that much about him because I grew up watching a little bit of Florida Championship Wrestling and Dusty Rhodes and those guys with Gordon Solie back in the day, but I wasn't really a big pro wrestling fan, so I didn't know very much about Eddie at all. And he was good with us. We were the tag team champions of his league, and he always treated us fairly. I mean, he was a character. You couldn't believe a lot of the stuff he said, but once you got over that, he was fine.
That's, I think, especially at that time, that's the majority of people involved in professional wrestling. You have to take
Yeah,
everything what they say with a grain of salt.
yeah, and wrestling itself, is kind of a started out in a carnival kind of atmosphere. So, you kind of realize early on that it's not, like a regular business, so to speak. It's filled with kind of back end deals and shysters and a lot of self promotion. And I've seen promoters fight each other over houses and stuff like that. So believe me, it's a strange occupation.
Yeah, it is. And there's, obviously some of that's not, I mean, some of it's not great, but there's some of that side of wrestling, just, it's so fascinating, right? Especially when you talk about the more the territories of small areas, some of these disputes and things between promoters and different, it was weird things, because I wrestled briefly in Indiana in the early two
Okay.
the late 90s, early 2000s,
Okay.
and primarily wrestled for a guy right in my hometown, Columbus, Indiana. But it was and he was it was so odd, because he had this old mentality of, but if you wrestle for me, you can't go 50 miles up the road and wrestle for that guy. And I was like, well, why not? And then he's like, well, that's my competitor. I'm like, well, yeah, no, he's an hour away. That's not a competitor. I mean, that's not and so there's even
Well,
at that small scale.
Yeah, I mean, early on it was territories, and you had people protected their territories. I'm kind of on the cusp. I'm old enough, to be around when that kind of happened, but I wasn't in the, I got in when it was really becoming these big companies, but I was familiar with territories and I knew people were coming from different regions, wrestlers. And then later you understand more that if you had a territory, you were running these little towns around there. You didn't want somebody else to leave, or you wanted to keep your guys there. So, it was an interesting, I think, time of the business. A lot more travel, moving from around, from territory to territory. And then, eventually it became just really too big, companies in the United States, and that was
Sure.
WCW and Vince, which was WWF at the time.
Yep.
And really, there was the smaller territories just kind of went by the wayside, unfortunately.
Well, and you mentioned Thunder and Lightning, right? We're with Clark Haynes, and you were Lightning, correct?
I was Clark Haynes. Yeah,
Haynes.
he
Okay, I'm
was kind of
sorry.
heinous. He was heinous
Yeah.
sometimes, but his name was Clark
I
Haynes. Yeah, yeah.
just.
I was Lightning, and he was Thunder.
Yeah. And so the weird thing is when I looked into it, right? There's plenty of information about you coming out of this team. There's not a lot out there about Clark. Did he not do a whole lot beyond the IWF and this team and stuff? I mean,
Yeah, well, exactly. We were together as a tag team in WCW. So we started out in IWF, and Clark was bigger than me. He was a bigger guy, and we kind of thought, this was during the big heyday of the Road Warriors and all these big guys, and we weren't that big. I wasn't that big. I was in good shape, over 6 feet and at 250, 60 pounds. But there was some huge men, that were in wrestling. So I'm not going to stand out as anybody like that, but I thought together it was two kind of bigger guys, and Clark was bigger than me, as I said. We had kind of a look, I think. And we really thought we were, WWF, material because of the we had capes, we had the good Thunder Lightning and, blah, blah, blah. We ended up going to WCW, and it just wasn't, I mean, it wasn't, I don't want to say it wasn't the best fit, but it was fine. We went there, and we had a developmental contract, but we were going down to the power plant. We were still wrestling. We thought we had a lot more leverage as a tag team than we thought. And, we were just green and didn't understand the business. I think the Harlem Heat were in there around the same time, and we got in a contract dispute actually over our contract with WCW. And subsequently, Eric Bischoff, and the booking committee kind of withdrew their offer for us. And we had been there for more than a year, already kind of doing the developmental thing, and we're starting to, get on TV more and kind of, learning. And when that happened, Clark, subsequently ended up leaving the business. So, we were together for a while, and all I did was tag team wrestle with him, and I ended up doing some tours overseas with some other kind of Thunder partner fill-ins, but it was never the same. But eventually I got back into wrestling as a single. But that history of Clark and I, where we started, at Steve Kern's school, all through the IWF, through the WCW for those few years. And then, after that, Clark, he had a family business that he was married at the time, and he made the right decision for him and his family. They had a big trucking company, and he went to work for his father-in-law. And he never went back into the business. So, he was the best man at my wedding, and we're still best friends to this day. I love him. He's like a brother to me. So there was no hard feelings. He went one way, I went the other. And but yeah, there's not that much about Clark, but he was an incredibly talented, big, strong guy, and was the best partner I ever had. Really, the only real. Well, he wasn't the only partner. I tagged with Scott Norton a lot in Japan, but Clark was my, go-to. I mean, that's where we started.
And that time you were in, it was the early 90s when you were in WCW. That was kind of a, it was kind of a peculiar time for WCW because they were, coming out some of those hot years that kind of, dropped down a little bit, Turner sold, but, and they had yet to really, hit their sweet spot and really, start back on the rise. I think that was pre-Hogan, I believe, when they, things started. So that was kind of a peculiar time for WCW too. It seemed like they lacked a lot of direction and vision and stuff. So I imagine it was, I don't
You're
know.
absolutely right, David. It was a weird time. Back then, we were running two towns. They had an A town and a B town. So you had, half the guys were going to one town. Like the A town was the big stars. Then you had a B town, and there was a lot of travel, and they had a lot of talent, a lot of guys coming up, but there was just not a lot of places for everybody. You had a lot of veterans that were there. You had a lot of new guys and developmental talent that were trying to make a name for themselves. And it just wasn't, as you said, it was kind of a little downturn in the business. So things were just not as economically good for the company, and they were talking about cutbacks and blah blah blah, and people getting let go, and it was a very strange time. But eventually, yeah, the whole company turned around, and I of course feel quite strongly that we superseded the WWF in the war of the two leagues, at that point with the NWO and stuff. I really felt we were the number one wrestling company really going.
But a lot of people, I mean, I guess they looked into you would, I mean, you were there, you came back to WCW around 95 too, which was starting, things were starting to improve a little then, right? They had a little more star power on the roster thing, but you came back as Cobra, and feuded, primarily it was like a set up a feud with you and Craig Pittman. And talk to me a little bit first about Pittman, because I always like Pittman, because he's a, I mean, a former Marine, a legit tough guy. Always had that. Just thought he had a great look, and no matter what he did in the ring, whatever else, when you looked at him, you thought, man, this guy can legit kick my ass. And, it's like he looked tough, and
He was, Pittman was a had real chops. He was a he was a military. I don't know what level he was. I think he was a Greco-Roman wrestler. It wasn't freestyle. I think he was Greco-Roman, but he was very high up and had a big, had a pretty substantial pedigree in wrestling, right? And was a legitimate, wrestler. So, and he looked the part. I mean, he looked like a little pit bull, And so it was good thing for him. I mean, Cobra, I just kind of came back with that idea, and that was my thing, and I remember going to talk to actually Flair at the time, down at Center Stage when we were running out of there, and he's like, yeah, he said, well, the big story was, and I'll let me back up a little, Dave, if you want to hear it, is that, when Clark left, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I had, that was what I had, both of us had put all of our eggs in that basket, and so when that gets stripped away from you, it's a kind of a scary time in your life. And I was just married too at that time. Clark was married, didn't have any kids yet, but and so I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was thinking about going back to school. I actually had a chance to it's a crazy side story, to be on the American Gladiators, to be one of the gladiators. That was that's a long story, I'll tell you another time. But
I always
you
loved
know
American Gladiators.
I was well they came to Orlando and I tried out to be a contestant, and they said, after my tryout, they said, hey, we want you to be one of the gladiators. Would you be interested in that? And I said, sure. And so, I went back for another tryout to be a gladiator. And they said, yeah, we want you to do it, but you have to go to Europe. They were just sending a group over to Europe to do it. And then that's really when I got a call back. This was after Cobra. And I think it was after Cobra, maybe it was before, but I think it was right after. Or maybe it was around that time, and that's when I got a chance. I said, "Do I want to do wrestling? Get back into wrestling as Cobra, or do I want to take a chance on the Gladiators?" And I ended up going with wrestling, and got back into it. And Flair said, "Hey, I know you. I know you know how to work. Come down to the center stage, and we'll do something with you." And then I kind of got back in on a kind of by match basis, and then later got a contract. But that Cobra was something I just kind of ended up working down at the power plant and came up with a character and said, let me try this as a single.
And it was kind of cool, because they, I mean, you had a whole backstory and everything. I remember them telling on TV, that you were left behind by Pittman in the Gulf War, and you came to WCW to seek revenge. It was very, 90s action hero type character, the whole thing.
I thought it was good. I had a dog tags, I would give them to the kid. In the audience, kind of a la Brett, I stole that from Bret Hart, kind of when he did the sunglasses, kind of like, I'll give him a dog tag, because we were running shows too, it was a lot of kids. So I thought it could be good. I mean, I had no military background at all. Pittman did, but I didn't. But it was a character, and it was fine, and it got me, some experience as a single, and I grew a lot and learned a lot. I didn't think it was being pushed, but probably me and a bunch of other guys had the same complaint,
Well, yeah, and then like in 96 is, where you became the NWA's thing, which is probably what you're most known for in your career. And it was, it came, you came out, you attacked Lex Luger, leading Luger, the fans, everybody, to believe that really that Sting had joined the NWO, right? That was the whole thing, right? It was supposed to be this swerve. And then, at War Games, you came out for the NWO. which, you know, people, you know, still, you know, was thinking, you know, Sting had joined them. Then the actual Sting
Right.
came out later and everything else. Was it intimidating for you though to try to play this character that was already established, that already someone had done? I mean, did it add like a dimension of a pressure to you? Because at first you were trying to mimic him, you know, because you're trying to, you know, make people believe that you're actually
Right.
Sting.
Right.
Was that intimidating at all for you? Especially
Yeah,
Sting,
I
who's
mean
such an icon there.
yeah, I mean, I knew Sting, from WCW, and they had a FX guy who actually tried to do prosthetics, and I wore contacts, and they were trying to make really come off. And actually, Eric Bischoff told me, he said, if this gets out, I'm going to squash it. And he said, so I said, okay, I'm not going to let it out, So yeah, I had to kind of watch Steve's matches and see what he did, and mimic, the splash, stinger splash in the corner, and the scorpion, and do his moves, the kind of face plant he would do where he grabbed the guy by back of the head, So I had to watch and kind of pick up on what he did, but I mean, I was a athletic. It was no problem for me to do the moves. I just had to watch and see what it was, right? And so once I did that, and initially, I don't think they were going to use this character more than just the initial thing. I was just doing, of course, what I was told, right? But I think that Hogan, from what I heard, I didn't talk to Hogan about this, but I heard he liked it, and they kind of liked the character and said, hey, we can kind of keep this going, especially once everybody realized there was a hoax, right? Because now okay, that's not Sting. It's a somebody playing Sting. And when that happened, that allowed me to kind of change the character a little bit, right? And so then I could kind of be like, I don't, I'm not, now I'm a, now I'm not trying to mimic you. I'm trying to be a thorn in your side and mock you and do things that are kind of creating, getting you angry. So that allowed the character to really develop into a separate little character, which in Japan was really separate, because they absolutely knew 100% there was an NWO Sting and there was a real Sting. And I actually changed the way I worked in Japan, especially because I still did some things, like the Scorpion or whatever, but I changed my whole work style, which you need to do in Japan anyway. And most of that was from Masa Saito and Scott Norton telling me, look, this is what they expect out of you. And so I kind of, did it that way. But I was able to kind of morph it into something of its own little character, which was worked out for me in New Japan, especially.
So was Sting, was he always supportive of you doing the
I mean, who really wants to,
Yeah, I know.
who really wants to think there's somebody that could take your place, right? And they're paying him a hell of a lot more than they were paying me, right? So I mean, I never talk to him about it, but I don't know what the business politics were going back there. I wasn't trying to replace him or be him or anything like that. I had no intentions of doing that at all. Was not something that I even thought about. I just kind of was doing what they told me. But now, is it a little shot over the bow for Sting to say, hey, we got a guy that can kind of do your stuff? I don't know, if that was something that was the office was trying to do. But I mean, Sting, he shouldn't, him, he's an icon. I don't think he was worried about his position. And I'm sure he had a lot of say so in it. And I don't think I think if he didn't like it, he probably could have said, I don't want this. But thankfully for me, and I haven't talked to Steve about it, but I also said, so much could have been done with him and I. Once I got that character over in Japan, him and I could have wrestled there and just been a huge, sellout. And also, we could have tagged up together. We could have done a lot of, this two stings. I mean, there could have been some stuff. Now, again, I don't know how he felt about it, but there was a lot of angles that I think really could have been taken advantage of that just weren't. And there was a lot of turmoil at that time in the business too, and with Sting personally. He was going through stuff, and the whole everything that was going on. And I thankfully didn't know about that, and really wasn't concerned about it. I didn't have to be part of the decision making. I was just kind of being supportive and doing what I was trying to do to help the company and help, the show and the business and myself, all, all wrapped into one.
Like you said, though, I think I think he had probably enough pull that if he was really opposed to it, he could have gotten it. He could have got it in if he really wanted.
And I mean, they actually went out of their way to kind of bury my character a little bit later. You know, they had
Yeah.
Luke, you know, and they were doing things where, you know, so they definitely got their point across too. You know, they made me lose, you know, and when the Steiners and we did a tag match or something, and you know, I'm left out there hanging and he comes out, and you know, so they definitely were able to kind of establish, hey, there's a sting and a fake sting, right? But the beauty of that also was that, as I said, in Japan, I had nobody was telling me. I had my own creative control basically on NWO Sting in Japan, and that allowed me to kind of get that character over and do my own thing, which, you know, and in a way, sometimes I was joking with somebody and I said Steve should be thankful that he was getting a lot of, you know, basically push off of me over there doing that character when he wasn't even, you know, working in the ring. And I was having, you know, hundreds of matches.
I mean, like you said, you working in Japan for the NWO Japan, it's almost, I mean, Sting became more popular. I mean, NWO Sting, you became much more popular in Japan. I mean, why do you think that? Why do you think they took to it so much more in Japan than they did? I mean, was it just like you said, the opportunity, the chance to develop it a little better, or?
Yeah, I think it was the opportunity. As a matter of fact, it's funny. They had I've told this story on another podcast. They have a rating of gaijins, you know, the foreigners that come out on there. And I was either number five or maybe even number three in the country at one time. And Steve was on the list, but he was like number 10, you know. So I had rated, you know, it was like, you know, Vader and Scott Norton and these other guys. I don't know where I was up there, but you know, and I had been there working, you know, every single tour, you know, as NWO Sting. So it was popular and the NWO was popular. I mean, that's not on my back, you know, but I mean, Chono and Muda and the NWO and, you know, Scott and everybody, the NWO we were doing in Japan was over huge. And that character became very popular, and his own character, you know, during that time.
I mean, like you mentioned, you were teaming with, Norton quite a bit. I think you teamed with Chono some. Who you had a tag title run over there. Was it with Norton that you had
Yeah,
the
Scott and I tagged a lot. He was probably the number, because, you know, we had like similar, you know, we're the two Americans that were there almost every tour, you know, and they bring in other guys, you know, of course, you know, Eddie came in sometimes and those guys that were just amazing talents, you know, Chris Benoit, you know, these guys that have been over there already and been, you know, kind of already working there and were superstars really in New Japan. So those guys would come over, you know, the Fit Finleys and the Mike Rotundos and the Brian, oh, what's his name? You know, was awesome guy. No, I can't think of it right now.
Not sure.
That's all right. He was with he did a tag, like with not the Legion of Doom. Anyway, I'll have to think about who it is. But there was a lot of good guys over there that were rotating in and.
I mean, Scott Norton, I always thought Scott Norton is so underappreciated because I don't think WCW ever used him properly. And he was so much better used to his strengths and what he could be in Japan. And I was always a big fan of, I mean, always a big fan of his work, period, but particularly his work in Japan. I loved it during that period where he had that one period where he teamed with Hercules. I think they call themselves the
Yep,
Jurassic
powers.
Connection Powers. Yeah, it's
Yep.
a dress. Oh, man, I always thought they were so cool. And but I always thought they could have done more with Norton in WCW if they just used him a little more as that powerhouse badass that he was. I mean, this guy, I mean, look at him. And
No, Scott, you know, you're absolutely right, 100%. You know, they didn't handle him right in WCW. Here he is, you know, the IWGP heavyweight champion, you know, from Japan, which is probably the best, toughest area to work, bar none. And, you know, you bring him here to the US and he doesn't really get the same thing. Now, you know, again, politics and who's in charge and who wants to, you know, you have a TV show and you only have so much airtime. And you got all of these guys, you know, Hogan and everybody and, you know, all of them, you name all the top guys. There's just, unless you're going to be in that clique of group guys that are in there, you're just, you're going to kind of be lost in the shuffle a little bit. And I think that's what happened to Scott. And they promised him a lot of things, and they promised him the heavyweight title and this and that. And, it just didn't pan out for him, which is unfortunate. But, his real, shine and glory days were in New Japan. I mean, that guy, was is a still to this day like a revered and a superstar in that company. And none of those other guys have that. Hogan's not that there in New Japan, and no Sting or anybody that that Scott owns that. Vader is another one. Vader was over there for All Japan a lot, for Baba's group, and he was the kind of a big American gaijin there. But Scott Norton, bar none, was the man in New Japan.
And in Japan, you left, you end up leaving the NWO Japan. You became known as Super J,
Yeah.
and you, man, you had a great run as that too. But what is that? What was the thinking behind that? And it's, I mean, I know they had the Super J Cup, right? But that's like for
They
juniors.
did. They did. They had the Super J Cup. I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, that
So,
was why. So why did they put that name on? I'm very confused by what that was supposed to be.
you and me both. Okay, Dave. I was confused too, Dave. No, Amasa. They wanted. We did Team 2000. And they said, okay, the NWO. Got disbanded. So they said, Jeff. We got to change. Your character. And I didn't come up with anything. I could have had some ideas if they would ask me, but they just said, I guess because my name was Jeff, so they said Super Jeff, like that. But they said, we're going to go Super J, And I asked Masa one time, I said, why? And this is Masa Ito, who God rest his soul. I loved Masa. He was a big mentor for me and probably one of the best guys I've ever known. And he said, they can pronounce Super J, the fans can say it easy. They know how to say Super J. So I said, okay. If Masa would have told me to put on a tutu, I would have put on a tutu and went out there, So I said, fine, Super J, I don't care. And then they at one point said, we want to put you in a mask, and I wore a little Super J mask, which was hard to wrestle in. But yeah, it's just something they came up with. And I think it was just easy for the Japanese fans to say. And I don't know if it's because they knew Superman or whatever, but they just, figured Super J. So I didn't question it. Masa told me, and I said, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I just thought it was kind of seemed like it was just kind of odd because they'd already used the Super J phrase for that. Because you thought, I don't know. I mean, I guess.
You're and Dave, you're right. It was a little odd. And they had the Super J Cup, and they, it was a weird thing. But I they said it, and I said, oh, whatever.
I mean, which, clearly you aren't going to compete in the Super J. You're way too big a guy. So it's, I don't know. I mean, whatever. I mean, I do know, there's, they have their thing where they like to do anime type characters and manga type characters and things like that. And, these superhero type characters. So, I mean,
Yeah,
I
and I
guess.
really think that was it, Dave. They really kind of wanted me to be like a superhero character. And I think that's why they came out with a mask later, and I did the mask a little bit. Me and Strong Machine, this other guy that was a Japanese wrestler, kind of wrestled together as a tag a little bit here and there. And yeah, Super J was just, something they came up with, and I just, went with it. But there wasn't any deep meaning behind it or anything like that.
Well, I mean, what? But no matter what it was, I mean, it was still accepted, right? I mean, and then you still were over, and it was still working. It was, so I mean, I guess they are chose right. It still worked.
It and the Japanese fans are so smart, so they knew it was me, too. Like they weren't confused by it. They were like, I didn't say anything. Like I never did some kind of coming out of NWO Sting and coming off with the pain and being Super J. I just showed up as Super J, and the fans are smart, and they're like, oh, that's NWO Sting now is Super J. And they accepted it, and they started getting behind that too. So, and a lot of it was obviously Chono and the group that we had. They were behind them, and then you throw somebody in with those guys, you're going to get the rub just off of being with the top guys in the promotion, so definitely, that helped. And then once you get a few wins or establish a little bit with this group, they accept you pretty quick.
I always thought it's very cool in Japan that they've got this very unique appreciation for like the evolution of characters and these. alter egos of characters and things that they understand. Like, you know, if Muta comes out with a certain paint or a certain mask, we're like, oh, this is Muta, right? This is whatever, this version of Muta. You're in trouble now because now he's serious and things like that. And in Dark Liger, Jushin Liger had there was it, and even like Tiger Mask, right? With the the opposition was the dark version and different things. They were very good at accepting these characters and these evolution of characters and these alter egos and things. They did view it in a very much a superhero type way in how these things developed. And it's kind of cool. And that's why I guess that's what made all this work. And
Absolutely. To this day, the Japanese fans are some of the best fans that I've had the privilege to work in front of, because they wanted, and the big difference in Japan and the United States was, and here was like a lot of fluff and pomp and circumstance and, all that stuff, which gets over. People want to be entertained, right? You want to see the entertainment side. In Japan, they want to see a fight. They want to see a more evenly matched. They don't. Squash matches. In Japan, there's none of those. They don't really. They don't do those because it's an easy way to get somebody over in the U.S. But the Japanese, they don't like that, and they kind of frown on it. So, it's they want to see. Now you can have a somebody who's outsized, and they see him fighting back, and of course they love that because they like that fighting spirit. But they don't, they want to see a contest. They want to see two people going at it and putting in the time and putting in the work. And that's really what you had to do in that company. And you got rewarded for it by the fans. Like they appreciated that you worked hard. And Scott and I talk about this. We would get back from a tough match and we sit on the bus and pop a beer, on the getting ready to drive somewhere. And it's the best beer in your life because you worked so hard in that match and you got the fans behind you and you did everything you were, supposed to do as an entertainer and as a performer. And it's physical and rough, and you pop that beer and you're like, man, that was a hell of a night, And I never felt that anywhere else but there.
And it's on the few cases they did have kind of a squash type match, it was a big deal. And I'm thinking, if I'm remembering right, when they first debuted Leon White as the Big Van Vader character, I'm pretty sure he beat Inoki pretty quick. And like it was like a couple minutes, and it's like the whole world was like, whoa, what is this guy? And I mean, instantly, bam, Vader's the man. And I mean, it's still talked about to this day because they saved that stuff for the big impact and the big importance. It's like, they knew
Listen,
how to.
they know what they're doing. They did
Absolutely.
that, in order to get, him over to start out, to get him over right off the bat. And then, he just soared from there. And Inoki, was smart to do that. They know what they're doing. Even most of our tours, right? And Scott and I would team up, and most of the time we would beat everybody, for most of the tour until the end. And then, of course, that's when they got their comeuppance. We would do the job for those guys, and the people would go crazy because they've been watching and following. They're like, man, we hate these guys. I mean, they liked us, but they hated us, And so when the time was right, in a big show on a big pay-per-view kind of thing or whatever venue it was in, it was like that was the reward, and they loved it. And then we'd go home and, come back and do the same thing again.
Well, one thing that people may not know about you is you've also had a pretty great academic career. And in late 2010, you became the project manager of a research program known as GEAR at the University of Miami. So tell us about GEAR,
Well, it
and
was
what.
a, well, it, you know, it is true, Dave. I when I got out of wrestling, and look, I was fortunate, I wrestled, full time. That was my only job for more than 12 years. I had to sit down and do the math, but that's all I did. So, it wasn't the fact that a lot of people don't even know that much about me, unless you're probably Japan where I did the most wrestling. But I'm saying it's kind of like this was not a side hustle for me. I did this full time for a long time. And when I got out of wrestling, thankfully I was still could move and didn't have any major injuries and still had my faculties about me. And I really had, to think about, what am I going to do? You know, and I went back to school. I went back to school and got a master's degree in public health. And I work at the university now, still, you know, and it was just a chance for me to think about, you know, something. I mean, you know, wrestling is hard to hang up, as you know, as a wrestler, you know, it's hard to put those boots up, man, when they say, hey, just come out and do this little spot appearance or this and that. And you know, I did a few things here and there as I was kind of transitioning out of it, but I made a commitment to say, okay, I'm gonna, you know, focus on starting over and getting this education and using my mind and let my body take a little rest. And fortunately, I was able to do that.
So tell what exactly was gear?
Oh, it was a genetic exercise. I had, you know, I started out, it's funny, Clark and I were personal trainers, you know, and I had a bodybuilder when I was younger, played football at UCF and you know, thought I was going to maybe play in the NFL, but that didn't pan out. And so I always had a lifelong, you know, kind of interest in weights and weight training and was a certified personal trainer, and Clark was too. And later I got into the science of it and got to use my brain.
And so now that you're retired, do you still get out though, and do you ever make any appearances at conventions or anything like
You
that?
know, sometimes I do. I have made a few, you know, Scott will sometimes tell me, hey, you know, you should come out and do this and I'll do one, but not too much. I mean, it's not something that I really, you know, really care that much to do or need to do. I mean, of course, if Japan asked me to come back, I don't think I would hesitate a second to do anything over there for Muda and Chono and any of those guys or New Japan. It's been an honor for me to be a part of that company, and I certainly would jump if they asked me to. But yeah, nothing really here in the U.S. Occasionally, an appearance or a signing or something. But you know, I'm just kind of you know, doing my own thing.
So then what does the future hold for Jeff Farmer? What are you planning in the future? You got any projects in the works or anything, or it's
No,
just
you know, nothing really. You know, I you know, probably I have some property in North Carolina, so I'm probably gonna do something there and end up getting out of Miami at some point.
We're at North Carolina.
It's in Western North Carolina, outside of Asheville.
Currently I live in North Carolina. I live
Oh, where do you live?
near Raleigh on the east, more the
Oh,
eastern. But
so
that's just,
this.
I've only lived here about 5 years. I'm originally from Indiana, but
You like it?
no, I do, yeah. But we're planning in the near future to move to the Pensacola area. We have our oldest son lives there, and we kind of like that
Woo, coming to
area.
Florida. We just got a hurricane coming through here
Yeah, I
right
know
now.
it. Yeah, we've been in contact with our son. You know, hey, how's it? And he's like, oh, it's gonna miss us a little bit. We're not gonna get any direct, but
Yeah, same for me here in Miami. We're gonna luckily miss it. I mean, it is. I was just talking about this. It is one of the. There's beauty in Miami, of course, with the beaches and the climate and all of that. But there's, you know, this ever-present, you know, kind of danger of the weather and hurricanes. And there's not a lot you can do. You know, you can kind of, you know, hunker down and bolt everything down. And if it's really bad, you got to get out. But it is a side thing. You know, you don't have that in North Carolina. Maybe in California, you're worried about earthquakes and things like that, or fires. But you know, where I am in North Carolina, I don't think there's too many threats there. So,
No, nothing really. I'm from Indiana, where Indiana was always tornadoes, and that we were, but it just kind of became, it's just such a part of your life. You didn't, everybody knew, I mean, elementary schools, you did tornado drills, and everybody knew what to do. And it's like, oh, tornado warning or tornado watch. You just, it wasn't as big a deal. It's like, and then I'm here near Raleigh, and the one time we had a tornado, oh, they spotted a tornado, and everybody was really freaking out. And I'm like, eh, what? It's
Yeah,
like,
it's the
maybe.
same here. We're all anybody who's from Florida, you know, or you know, I've been here. I grew up here, you know, went to school here and then went to Atlanta and then came back. I've been here for the last 15 years. You know, it's the same thing. You're prepared, you know, they come every year, you know, hopefully they're not bad, but you know, you're not freaked out by them, you know.
That's what we used to go. We'd go out in the back when I was in Indiana. We'd go out in the backyard and see them off the distance. Oh, that's a couple of miles away. We're good. We don't have to worry about that. That's not coming our way. Didn't even worry about
Yeah.
it. But it's different here. It's just like snow. They get a half an inch here and everything shuts down. And I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, Atlanta was like
It's
that too. You know, in Atlanta, if it snowed, everybody freaked out. Like, what do we do? It's like, okay,
Yeah, but
we'll
it's
see
I
you
then I
guys
think
out.
well then I think it's not like Indiana where you have every town's got salt trucks and you got salt domes along the interstate, and They don't have that equipment here, I guess. And it's like, in Indiana, you'd get a foot of snow and it's like, hey, you better still be at work.
Yeah, true.
No big deal. But well, all right, Jeff, I appreciate you giving me time and talking. And I think
Sure.
I'd love to revisit sometime and dive in a little deeper, particularly into Japan, and
Yeah.
talk a little more about your career there. Like I said, I just kind of want to do an overview today. And everything else, because like I said, a lot of people just know you from that run in WCW as NWO Sting, and don't realize that. I mean, like you said, probably your most active, your prime years of your career were in Japan, and
Yeah,
some of your best work.
100%.
So,
And
and
I'll
you
be
know,
glad, Dave, to sit down again and have a chat with you. You're
yeah,
very knowledgeable
well, thank you,
I know you're one of the boys. So
yeah.
anytime, let me know. We'll sit down. I apologize. I wasn't able to do it last time.
Oh
I,
no, it's no problem.
something went out with my whole Facebook. I had to
That's,
redo it.
yeah, I saw you say something about that. Yeah, that you, yeah, but it's no big deal. People reschedule all the time. I have to reschedule this. Yeah, I understand. This is life gets in the way. This is not a thing. Jeff, do you, before we let you go, do you have any kind of public social media that people can follow you and keep track
No,
of you? And since
Dave,
you're not,
I'm one of those guys trying to drop off the radar,
yeah, there you go. All right.
not get on it. So
There you go.
I don't have anything, but I appreciate you, and I appreciate, guys that are interested in the business and the guys that, again, you're a former wrestler, so and it is a very unique, opportunity to do something that a lot of people have no idea about. And so I just appreciate it when there's people that understand it and know it and are fans of it and kind of want to go back and rehash some of it, because
Absolutely.
it was definitely a high spot for me in my life.
Yeah. Like I said, it's fun. And I anybody that to me, anybody involved, I've talked to guys, right? Wrestlers. I've talked to guys behind the camera, guys doing this, doing that. They all have fascinating stories, and it's fun to talk to them. And the best thing is anybody associated with wrestling, they love to talk, right? And they can tell stories for hours, and it's great.
It's so true. It's
It
so
is.
true.
They all love to tell stories, and it's fun. Because I love to hear them. So, well, we'll just say, Jeff, that if anything pops up for you, if you happen to do any appearances or do anything or whatever else, you just let me know, and I'll get the word out there, and I'll help
All
spread the
right.
word for you, since you don't really have public social media.
All right. I
But
appreciate it, Dave. I
yeah,
enjoyed it.
I me too. And like I said, I'd love down the road a little bit to dive in again and maybe talk a little deeper on the Japan stuff, because
Absolutely.
I'm fascinated to hear a little more about that
Oh, I
and
got some
everything
good
else.
stories from
I
there.
bet, I bet. So yeah, we'll do a part two down the road and really just focus in on the Japan years. So
Sounds good.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at RASSLIN Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review. where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to USWAPodcast.com.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
All right, and thank you to Jeff Farmer for coming on the show and doing that interview with me. What a great guy. Fun talk. I will probably talk to him again in the future. Dive maybe a little deeper into that Japanese career he had. Like I mentioned earlier, follow me on all of the social media outlets. I'm on Blue Sky, Facebook, X, Threads, Instagram, and YouTube. You can look up pretty much anywhere. Look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty and find me that way. Also, go check out all the other WrestleCopia Network podcasts. All the shows are great. They're fun listens that shine a light on wrestling history with great hosts, great guests, great co-hosts, great topics, just great everything, man. They're so much fun. Go to WrestleCopia.com to find those podcasts, or you can look them up on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library at ClassicWrestling.net or download the app on all your devices. Also, be sure you go hit up Filsinger Games. You heard the ad earlier. You saw the announcements on social media. They are officially on board as an official sponsor of Wrestling Nostalgia. So go to FilsingerGames.com and look at all the products and order something for yourself or that wrestling fan on your Christmas list, right? Christmas is coming up, so it's a great gift. Order them something from Filsinger Games. Next week's guest, I'm super excited about this one. Next week's guest is Stormy Granzig. He is making his first ever podcast appearance. I know all of you fellow Midwest WWA fans are excited about this one. We talk about working for Dick the Bruiser, Spike Huber in the Phantom title change, and much, much more. You're going to want to hear that next week. It was a great, great chat. Stormy was a little nervous. He told me, he said, hey, I didn't know what we were going to talk about. I thought, you know, we would chat for 5 minutes and we'd be done. But we got a good probably hour-long interview in. Lots to talk about with him. He's a fun guy to chat with, and I look forward to all of you hearing that on the next episode. Thank you, all of you, all the listeners, the supporters, for the follows and the interactions, all your downloads, listens, etc. It is very much appreciated. So, without saying anything else, let's get out of here. Until next episode with my guest, Stormy Granzig. Remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.